content managers. We love them, but we'll keep to a purpose today.
This is my wife. This is my wife with her mercy dance. Yeah.
I have two questions. One, just very quick one, is do you foresee a time when you would ever have a mentoring session where a group at large would submit questions to you before the mentoring session and you just spend the mentoring session answering those questions?
Yeah, I'm really happy to do that. Yeah,
okay,
great.
That's the first step to get back.
That's the shortest answer I've ever given.
That's good. Okay. Second question is, you spoke about fire stones.
Yeah.
And either you or Ian have spoken about picking up stones in the river of life. And my question is, can you speak to the difference in those stones, or is there a difference in those stones, or are the purposes of those stones different?
Yeah.
And the third question is, okay, on the journey where you talk about engaging wisdom, you said these things have to be done before you engage wisdom. I've heard other people give the testimony of engaging wisdom ahead of time. Is it necessary to always go that route before you engage wisdom? So those are my questions. Bye.
Okay, I'll answer the third one first. Engaging wisdom, many people have forerunner experiences of engagement, because we have forerunner experiences of all sorts of engagements, but that doesn't necessarily mean that those engagements we are able to go back and engage them over and over again until they become ours. And wisdom in Proverbs 8, wisdom is there to help kings, princes, and nobles rule. So it's about ruling in righteousness and justice. And the level of authority we have to administer righteousness and justice comes out of the level of holiness in our lives. So you can engage wisdom, but that does not mean that wisdom will enable you to rule with righteousness and justice, only at the level of authority that you can carry. And also, you have to carry those things in your heart, which is why I talked about nurturing and incubating things in your heart to then give you authority to release that. So there's a process of deeper levels of engagement. So many people have met wisdom, but wisdom has more revelation to release when you're ready to receive it.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's always more that God has got for us in that as well. So that's short answer.
Yeah. Very good, Mike.
Now, what was the other question? Firestones, stones, okay. Yeah. The stones in the river of life are from the fact that it's a crystal river. So when you get up to the start of the river where you engage the Father, and you can get baptized into that river and into the Father, it is really thick with crystal. And the further it gets down into the realms of the kingdom, because you can follow it right down into the atmosphere of the earth where it's dammed up, waiting to be poured out in the last days in an outpouring of the river of life. And that's been poured up, waiting there a long time, waiting for us to reclaim the atmosphere of the earth to release it, by the way. So that's how it does. Basically, those stones are what come out of the river, and they represent facets of the manifold grace and wisdom of God. And the manifold grace and wisdom are the multicolored, multifaceted aspects of God's character, nature, and purpose that when you take one and you place it within, gives you an insight into revelation of something of the nature of God. The firestones are totally different in that they are nine stones which again represent the nature of God, and the initial stages of that are the fruit of the Spirit. Satan walked on the firestones on the mountain of God. They're only in the realm of heaven. The firestones are not in the realm of the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God. They're in the realm of heaven. They're associated with where we are seated, where Christ is at the right hand of the Father. And there are many different thrones in the realm of heaven. And they are what Satan looked into when he was Lucifer and before the fall. They contain revelation of the purposes of God for mankind. Now, he took that revelation and he looked into it, and he was supposed to reflect that out, because he was the light bearer to the rest of creation, including man, who had not been created at that point. When he looked in and saw that man's purpose was to rule in the heavens and the earth, he took exception to that and decided that he wanted to rule, because the heavens was his domain. But it was not just the earth, but we were supposed to bring heaven and earth back into alignment, because the nine stones that were on his body, and you can read in Ezekiel 28, the nine stones that were on his body, they were supposed to reflect the nine stones that represented the three strands of each of the three strands of DNA of God. So they're nine strands of DNA, which are encoded with the Father, Son, and the Spirit, and they're encoded with the different levels of God's revelation, the fruit of the Spirit, other levels. I mean, I won't go into all of it now, but I've done several sessions on the mentoring sessions into this in a bit more depth. And several of them recently, actually, there's a playlist which says Firestone, so you can look up those ones specifically and get some more revelation on it. When he looked into it and he was supposed to reflect out, that was his purpose. And the rest of creation was supposed to be illuminated by the revelation that was in those stones. So there's pretty deep revelation in those stones. Now, he then traded with that information for that, using that knowledge as power to seduce a third of the angels of heaven, which, if you think of how many stars there are, and there are hundreds of billions and maybe trillions of stars in the different galaxies. I think there are 400 billion galaxies, and each one has got billions of stars. So there's a lot of stars. Each one of them has a named angel that was associated with each one of those stars. So there's a lot. And a third of them fell, seduced by the knowledge that he traded with to get them to war in heaven to secure him to rule instead of man. You know, and now the nine firestones represent the number nine, which is a number of fullness, but also a number of incompleteness. Because God chose that 12 would be the representation of fullness of kingdom government. Therefore, the nine strands of God and the nine stones of God needed to have our three strands or three stones. On the breastplate of the high priest, there were 12 stones. That represented the fullness of government. Our three go with the nine of God. Now, the number nine is a number that always adds up to itself. So, two nines are 18. One and eight equals nine. Three nines, 27. Two and seven equals nine. Four nines, 36. I'm pretty good at this, aren't I? Yeah. Three and six equals nine. So in God, there is completeness, but it's not the fullness of government, because God has chosen to bring man into government with him to bring the fullness of apostolic government. That's what's contained within the firestones, the revelation of that. So the deeper level of it are 12 protocols of the kingdom, the nine that come about the ways of God, the precepts, the ordinances, the wonders of God, the law of God, the commandments of God, judgments of God. There are nine things there which are deeper levels of how God administrates the kingdom, and then there are deeper levels of that again. I've gone three levels in. The third level, I've got no cognitive understanding whatsoever, but my spirit contains it. And when I go onto my mountain throne, I have a crown with 12 stones in it, representing those 12 stones. And they contain that which I have within me that I've received from those firestones and in my relationship with God. And they release a vibrating frequency when I get on my throne. And I start my saying things that I don't cognitively understand, because I release things. I say things in mentoring sessions that I've never said before or even thought about quite often, because I absorb that stuff. In looking into the revelation and stepping into and going into that revelation, and my spirit vibrates and absorbs it and resolves the frequency of it, which then gets released. When my spirit begins to flow, I suddenly start saying things and doing things that comes from looking into and experiencing that revelation. So that sort of probably gives you something of that.
So did the stars die before the angels fell?
No.
That's one question, so other people can do it. And I realize we all have a lot of questions, but let's throw one out. My one question. Once you acquire territory, can you talk about maintaining territory or keeping it?
Basically, each of us has, our mountain is who we really are in positional authority in the realms of heaven. And we are recognized there in government. We have seven spheres of authority that we rule from that mountain. So actually there's eight mountains. We were talking about this. There are eight mountains in the main mountains that we got. Now there are other mountains in terms of regional, and you may be involved in church mountains, and there are other governmental mountains. But in your own personal life, there is you as the mountain of God, and your spirit is a mountain. I never even took any notice of what my spirit looked like because I kept looking at God. So I opened my first love gate. Wow, God, come around me. It's like one day, it's like someone in a mentoring session was suddenly saying about, oh, they went back through the first love gate and went back into heaven. Wow, that's really cool. So I've just stepped in by thought because I've been there. Actually, I'm going to try following that. And then I actually thought, well, what does it look like? Where is that door? And I suddenly started to look around at my spirit and look at what it was like. And it's a mountain. And there are two thrones there, one for God, one for me. There's the door. That door is a pillar of cloud that reaches right back into heaven. That's what the Tower of Babel was trying to replicate in a natural sense, that we have within our spirit a connection right back into heaven, which is the kingdom within us. Where was I on that? Okay. So you have authority in those spheres of government. When you start to exercise that authority, you have to begin to frame your world in those spheres. So you begin to shape that out of what you see from your destiny. So I take each mountain, I go around the ark, I begin to incubate that, I begin to cultivate, brood over it, and I begin to look into what God's purposes were for that mountain. What would have that mountain look like before the fall? Now I'm going to do a session where I share how to do this, I think, here. Maybe even tonight. So you begin to get God's heart and desire for what God's desire is for that mountain, and your desire begins to align, then you release government into it, and then you can maintain that government, but maintenance is only for rule. So it's always about subduing and increasing that level of government. So there's a word that God gave us as a church, a Latin phrase. It was castra pone. And someone just had it prophetically in a meeting. And it was just like, So I set my friend, who's a linguist, onto it. And he found out that when the Romans took territory, they would go into a territory, they would set up an administrative center called the castra pone, and then they would set their supply lines to go and fill that administrative territory, and then they would then expand their conquest of the territory from there, because it was a safe place that they had brought Roman rule into, and they were administrating the Roman rule there. And so that is, in a sense, what we need to do. We need to establish a base, and then we outwork from that base. Now, we look at that in our own lives, but look at that in a church or a ministry or a group, and you're operating in that. When we set up these gardens of God or embassies of heaven, they are those castra pones. They are centers where we will administrate and become cities of refuge, so that they can not just stay there and protect ourselves, because we're not on defense. We're on offense. We're supposed to subdue and fill the earth and have dominion over it. So we're on offense. So we set these places up to take more and more territory, to take more and more ground, and to bring more and more of heaven onto earth so people can experience it and engage it. And people will be, one way of describing this is the mountain of the house of the Lord will be lifted up above all the other mountains, Isaiah 2, and all the hills will stream to it. In other words, when people see the true demonstration of the glory of God manifested in the kingdom that we represent on earth as it is in heaven, they will want to come and get all the answers that we will provide. So when the world's systems no longer provide the answers to their medical situation or their financial situation or to their governmental situation, they will come to the true church that is a mountain ruling above all those other mountains of the world. That they will stream to it, it says in Isaiah 2. So, I mean, does that give you some stuff? Okay.
I this is kind of a primitive question, but I'm hoping that you can help me get my literal left brain past the stumbling block. I had difficulty with the concept of mountain. Even you talk about mountains. Yeah. To me, it's a bunch of dirt. How can you go inside a mountain? Are you in a cave? I mean, so what is the concept of a mountain? We are a mountain, we have a mountain, we live on a mountain. That's what it's about.
Okay. Well, if you look in Ezekiel 28 and look at where the firestones were, he walked on the firestones on the mountain of God. Zion is a mountain. God rules from a mountain. His garden's on the mountain. The waterfalls come off the mountain. The river of fire, everything's on the mountain. And in the mountain, there were rooms, which are the trophy room and the 12 houses of the high chancellors. They're within that. So all the different rooms, they're within that mountain, which represents and is symbolic of the rule of God. Because mountains were symbols of authority. You see Mount Sinai, God came down on Mount Sinai. You saw Mount Ebal and where the covenant was brought. There, it was always about mountains. Because mountains were symbols of God. Now, if you look into the Hebrew words of the letters that make up the word mountain, you get an explanation of what it is. And I can't remember it, but it goes into the fact that it's representing government. So when we see our spirit as a mountain, it's symbolic of that our spirit is to rule and bring government. And on the top of the mountain, there are the thrones. God's thrones are on that mountain. Our throne is on our mountain in the realm of the kingdom of God. So that represents our position of authority in the kingdom. And it's because God chose to create a mountain to represent where he lives, his home, the house of God, the mountain of the house of the Lord. In Daniel, there will be a stone cut out of a mountain, which will then become a mountain that fills the whole earth, representing the kingdom of God, which will fill the earth, all representation of mountains. And so God has used that to show us the authority that we have, and it follows right through the word. The Garden of Eden is on a mountain, and you could, if you study where Eden was, you find that it was a waterfalls were flowing down from a mountain and to water Adam's garden. So it's always been right there from the beginning, and in the realms of heaven, God created a mountain, and we're supposed to reflect that mountain. So our life is God on the throne of our life. Where would that throne be? The same place God's throne is on his mountain. Our throne is on our mountain. And then when we invite him into lordship and kingship in our life, he's enthroned on the mountain of our life. And then the river of life flows down from our mountain out through our spirit gates into the soul, and it gets deeper and deeper and deeper until it's supposed to come out of us as a river that's out of our depth, which brings life wherever it goes. All flowing from a mountain. And of course, Jesus went up into the mountain. He went to mountains on the transfiguration, on top of the mountain. Yeah, lots of things were done in mountains because they're very symbolic of rule and government.
why Enoch built the pyramid, why the New Jerusalem is a pyramid.
The New Jerusalem is a pyramid. That's why the shape I saw on the top of the mountain, which represented the ministry of the four faces of God, was a pyramid, Jesus being the capstone. So Jesus is not the cornerstone of a corner of a house. He is the capstone, which actually is a mini pyramid that caps the whole thing off and holds the whole thing together. Because he is on the top of that mountain and high above all authority and power. And that's the symbolism of it. You know, many people think the New Jerusalem is going to be a cube. It's not. It's a mountain, a pyramid.
It's like the Hebrew word is, it means strong ruler.
Yeah, strong rulers in terms of.
Okay, I know we said we were going to stop at 1, but we'll take 4 more questions. So, and that will run off right there. So,
if you need
to
leave, feel free to
leave. Yeah.
That's 4 questions. That could be a long time.
Mike, you'll have to be really inside.
I sometimes have a whole mentoring session on 1 question. I'm going to try and be quick. Once I release things, I sort of release them. I think it's Hezer Ariel or something like that.
And I think you said it was of the Hashmonean, a mighty one.
No, it was an Ishim.
Okay.
So it's a big angel.
Okay. Angel.
Yeah, Prince Warring Angel over Prince this region.
That's
yeah.
What I want to know. Okay, in engaging this angel and the benches of three.
Yeah.
What's the relationship? Do they need to be established and as part of releasing these to do a work in Georgia? Like if you feel you're over a region or an area.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I seem to connect up with angels over areas where I go into them. When I looked into the realm of the spirit before I came, and I look a little bit, I like to come and find out when I'm in a place and be in the atmosphere. But I did look, and I saw some of the governmental structure over Georgia and some of the 7 dragons that are hindering and... some of the structure of the benches of three that will need to be established, they then work with that angel, and they then begin to interact with the fiery scroll. They would begin to interact with where are the ancient wells that need to be redug, where are the new wells that need to be dug. They will begin to administer that by calling things that be not as if they are from their mountains together. They will start to move and shift things to bring a flow into that, you know, that's how it will interact. But it takes a benches of three to engage with an angel at that level. But that angel is there to serve the government of Georgia in a spiritual sense. And it was large. I mean, you're talking about 150, 200 miles high.
Whoa.
With a big strand. Oh yeah, these are big
That's
things.
A big boy.
You know. So it can reach a long way to dig a hole.
Okay, both you and Ian have talked about going back into your life and reviewing your entire life one day at a time. Can you give me please? Capture something of just how you did it.
Yeah.
Roughly
enough. Okay. When I did this as a real crash course on my fast, my original fast. When I met Ian, well, I didn't meet him. When I heard him the one night, God told me to go and speak to him or see him, I then looked up on the internet, has this guy got any teaching? And I found some place in the US that had old teaching of his very first intensive teaching course, and in it had the gateway teaching. So I thought, wow, this is great. So actually, that's when I made my gateway wheel and had them all aligning and twisting up. And I I was really, I thought, hey, this, I've really got hold of this. I need to get my gateways open. So I walked with Jesus through all the gates, stood in there, got revelation of what they meant for me. And then I began to look at the soul gates and how do I get these in submission to the Spirit and flowing and working. So I understood the Spirit gates first, had revelation, particularly what how revelation, the revelation gate, the reverence gate, and the fear of God gates were really key to getting to bring the soul into alignment, because they had to bring the soul into reverence towards God. And so I then heard Ian talk about going back in each year of your life and looking at what your how your gateways were affected by what had happened to you in those years of your life. And I thought, actually, I can remember things from this year. So I'm going to start with now and work backwards. Now, some people start with before and go forwards. I don't think it matters, just doing it. I then submitted each gateway to God and each year. So I looked at my conscience gate, and I asked God to give me revelation of whatever I'd done that had damaged my conscience. Those things that I had not repented of, or those things I hadn't realized, but they damaged my conscience. And he began to show me a pattern of certain behavioral things that I had made. I had excused as excuses when they were actually sin. And we all got those little things that we find acceptable that aren't to God till he shows us. And because I applied reverence, see, I went through the reverence gate with Jesus to apply that to my conscience. So I wanted to know what anything I did that brought disrepute or dishonor to God. And he showed me. And then I looked at, then I went on to my imagination. What images did I see? Look at natural images, images in magazines, images in TV, films, computer games, anything. And had those images created something in my memory which the enemy could use to fuzz or make my imagination unclear or block it? Or even when and I know Ian has suffered with this a lot, he was getting intimate with God and all of a sudden he'd get this horrible image that would remind him of some sin, and then it would be like, oh, it break the connection to God. So I went back again each year. What images? I asked God to show me the specifics. I found that there were patterns of things that I then began to able to repent and renounce of the patterns and deal with the specifics. I then went to my mind. What in my reason center had I in mindset? What words had been spoken that I'd believe, which were lies? Show me the words that were curses over my life, that had been spoken over my life in each year. And I went through each gateway, my emotions, what hurts had been done to me that were still affecting me, that had hindered me. What had I hurt people with, that had my emotions had damaged people? And I was ruthlessly honest with myself. You have to be. And you only can do it because you know you're loved by God. Right. There's no guilt, shame, or condemnation associated with this process. It is just, I want to be cleansed. I want to be clean. I want to know me. And that's what it was. I got to know myself in doing this. I got to know how I functioned, what gates functioned more in me because of my gifting and calling. Because we don't have all the gates functioning in all the same dimensions because we're all different. So I have a lot of revelation gate functioning. You know, I didn't have so much intuition gate functioning, but I learned to engage that and I learned to develop it because I wanted some more intuition and sort of that knowing stuff. So I learned to train my spirit to know stuff by engaging God. So I went back through each year in each gateway and I found specific patterns. Some years they were like a few things that God showed me. Some years there were lots of things, and then I remember there were significant years in things that happened in my life. I identified trauma that had happened, rejection, fear, all those type of things. My will gate basically where my will had been surrendered because I'd made stupid decisions. And I went through that. Now, I did 2 or 3 years at a time, each day, for 3 weeks, basically. And I've got to be honest, I was pretty much wiped out. Now, I was pretty weak after a fast anyway, but I was emotionally, I just lay on the bed and just crashed. Sometimes I even fell asleep after, because they were intense. I had to be ruthlessly honest and real about facing my own behavior and my own attitudes and my own ways of thinking, and actually accept they were totally unacceptable to God. And the reverence gate was a key to enable me to understand how God perceived my behavior and attitudes. Not out of punishment, but out of a desire that I would be free and whole and flowing in the life of God. So I would invite the glory of God to come through each gateway as fire to purify and refine that gateway and enlarge it so that more could flow through it. But it took me, and I wouldn't necessarily encourage people. I mean, Ian took 3 years to do it. I did it in 21 days, and I was pretty much wiped out after each session. But I was determined. So I wanted to come out of this fast, flowing in as much as I possibly could in God. Yeah, so I went for it, you know. I mean, does that give you some answer? Yeah.
On a tape that Ian had, he talked about there's 7 layers of communion, but he never said what they were on the tape. Do you know them?
No. Can I look into the realm of the spirit and see what some of them are? Probably. They would be, I would see levels of transformation. So when you take communion, you are looking to enter into what Jesus did on the cross as the first level. So it's an exchange of covenant. So you're entering into victory, you're entering into life because you're engaging the cross and what the life of Jesus did there for us. Then you are looking to engage the DNA of God. So you're looking to engage the frequency of God, which shows where our frequencies are not aligned. So there's a level of transformation. You're looking to do the bloodline transformation, genetic transformation, iniquity transformation. And there are the skins of behavior that you can always engage there. So there are probably different levels of transformation I would see at some of those levels. If he's talking about anything else, I see it as where I get transformation and I engage God at a deeper level and apply that to my life. And I do that a lot. So, you know, we do it differently on a Sunday. In a sense, I struggled for years to find the revelation in this. Really did. We very rarely broke bread as a church simply because I couldn't find any revelation that made sense. Because it just seemed ritual. And whatever we did, we broke bread with each other at times and shared covenant, which seemed that was a little bit better. But it still wasn't it. I knew there was something more. So I thought, well, what's the point of doing something out of ritual when I can find no life? So I just didn't do it. You know. Because I couldn't find revelation, so I said, why do something out of duty? So when Ian came, I asked him to teach on communion. Because I thought, actually, I know this is important. I haven't got the revelation personally. I want to hear the teaching. It completely opened up the realm. And basically what we do, we put at the front of the church on a table a loaf of bread, and we put a bowl of juice. We don't use wine because we've got people in recovery, so we've removed the temptation of that. So we use juice, and we encourage people to go anytime they want during the meeting to engage. Now, we have the declarations out there laminated on the table that people can use. So people just go up during the worship. They go up at any time. They take some bread, and they dip it in the juice. And then you just eat it. Now, I take a big lump And I actually break bits off and I go through the declarations and I actually take it a number of times, each time applying a different level to it. So I, you know, you don't just have to do it once. It's not a little bit of this. I like the crust, so I break up a big piece of crust and I dip the crust in and I eat it, and then I would go through another level, like speaking to my marrow. When you speak to your marrow actually is what produces your blood. When you have a bone marrow transplant, you take on different DNA. Your blood actually has different DNA in it from your DNA of your cells, because that's where it forms. So the dividing of bone and marrow is about looking into the source of life that you speak into, and I speak life.
Yes.
Like Jesus, well, you know, in what was it in Ezekiel 37, Valley of Dry Bones? Breathe life. He spoke life into the dry bones. So I'm speaking into my bones. I want transformed DNA. It's going to take on the DNA of God, which will then begin to program the rest of my body. Because the blood goes through the heart and then to the brain and carries transformational power. Because as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Now, where does the heart pick up oxygen from the lungs? So it goes to the lungs, bringing it into the heart, back out to the body, back into the heart, back out to the lungs as a cycle of life, because we carry the breath of life. So that we're supposed to pick up the breath of life from the spirit, it's supposed to come into our heart and transform our body. So it transforms how we think within our heart. And literally, you can detect electromagnetic frequencies coming off the heart up to 12 feet, the brain only about 12 inches. Because we think the brain is the major thinking organ. It isn't. The heart is. And as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. That's why the memories that are contained within your heart, you have to get purged. That's why when you go through every year of your life, you're purging the memories that are stored within your heart. Your mind has neural pathways which form and link to the things that are in your heart, particularly if they are repeated. Repetition brings a link to the memory which is stored in your heart. You can break those neural pathways, get rid of the lies, and replace it with truth by meditating on the truth and form new neural pathways to the memories, which are the truth that you contain within you. Trauma forms instant neural pathways and instant memories. Generally, you get programmed with memories through nurture by drip, 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 what people say. But you can also bypass those memories in severe trauma and create dissociative disorder, where you get stuck in parts of your life. And at an extreme end, you can have multiple personality disorder, and you know, lie busting and things like that help to reintegrate those parts back into wholeness. But that's what happens. What's stored in your heart, you can get restored and made whole. And then that begins to program your whole body with the truth. So as we take communion, we can take on the record which is contained within what Peter shared in terms of the frequency of the DNA of God, to reprogram by speaking it into our marrow to produce blood that actually reprograms our life. You know? But it's making sure it goes through the heart with the truth in it, not the lies. So you do not want to be reprogramming your mind out of the lies. So that's why it's important to get your heart pure and refined. Because the pure in heart will see God. Okay? I like answering questions. I really do.
I had a question about fasting, about doing a long fast. And for me personally, I've always had breakthrough with fasting, and I've always wanted to do a really long fast, and I've wondered about it, because when I've attempted it, I get really weak and really, really skinny and almost like dying.
Yeah.
So, but I feel compelled to do it, and I need guidance on knowing when to take it on. And I've heard about two kinds of fasts: supernatural fasts where angels actually come and feed you life, and then you have a fast where you're dealing with all the weakness of the body.
Yeah.
So what's your guidance on undertaking a long fast?
Don't do it unless God really tells you to
right.
do it.
Amen.
Seriously, we can have desires to do something because we think we're going to get results from it, which is not wrong, but actually a fast does not do anything for God. It's supposed to put us in a place where we spend more time with God. If you can, if you're fasting and you're not spending any more time with God, pointless. And actually, you don't just have to have fast food. It's not just food that you fast. Look at your life. See what actually takes up more time in your life. It could be TV, or it could be reading books. It could be doing lots of legitimate things. If that takes up more time in your life than you're spending with God, fast that. Because that will allow you to spend more time with God, which is the point of fasting, to engage God. It's like, I don't do any fasting whatsoever, unless God says. Fortunately, he doesn't say it very often, so. But if you're going to do it, there are supernatural fasts, but you really need to be in faith for that. You know, there are people who are living today who do not eat or drink. There's a movement called a breatharianism movement. There's a one guy who's a Christian guy who's encountering that, and I've looked at his stuff, and I like food. So I have not felt compelled to take that on, but in reality, you can live without food and water if you are taking on the life of God, if you're breathing in the life of God to sustain you. Because actually, oxygen is what feeds the brain. And if you think of the spirit of life, and we're breathing in the spirit of life, that those people who are practicing that, they take communion every day. And they take a little, they don't take a whole loaf of bread, you know. They take a little bit. Because what they're doing is they're taking on the life of God, and they're receiving it in faith to sustain their life. Because they believe that they can live by the Spirit. Now, I've got no issue with that. I just don't personally feel compelled to do that at this point in time. Maybe in the future God may... You know, I have had thoughts about it, but not for very long. You know. But, you know, start, if you feel that you, start with a Daniel fast. You don't have, see, it isn't about not eating or drinking. It's about, my desire is to give this to God and to surrender this time with God. You know, if you're sort of like, well, I'm not eating, but I'm sitting at the table with everyone else eating, that's pointless. If you're going to fast, you need to go and take the times you were eating and spend time with God in those times. If you're going to shut yourself away like I did for 40 days, that was a very specific call. You know, I would not encourage people to do that unless you really know God is calling you to do it. You know, I had no trouble eating and not eating. It wasn't an issue. I never even got hungry, you know, because I knew I was called by God to do it, and I knew I was going to engage God as a result of it. Food was never the issue. The issue was, are you willing to spend 40 days with me? That was the issue, and the issue was, yes, I am. So I don't want to do it. I didn't fast just food. I fasted everything. I shut myself away for 40 days, you know, because I desperately wanted to get back into heaven, you know. But then I had a prophetic word that said, come and do this. You know, I wouldn't do it out of just natural desire or even... a desire that I want more with God. You need to know that you're called to do it. Then you can be in faith, and you can seek God for your supply, whether it's supernatural supply or just if you're just drinking water. You haven't got a lot to lose when it comes to weight. You know, I had a month's preparation before I went into the fast. I loaded myself with carbs for a month. Because I knew I didn't want to be so weak that I couldn't engage God. You know, so I mean, I lost 12 pounds in the first week. I think I sweated most of that out because I was so burning hot, you know. But in reality, you know, I was able to sustain that because I knew what God was calling me to do. You know, and I did have more to lose, you know, in terms of weight. You know, after 40 days, you will start... You know, if you do not have a lot of weight, excess weight, you will start consuming muscle, you will start consuming protein, and you will start consuming your own organs. And so you really have to be careful And when you break a fast like that, you do not go and have a big meal. It's like you can rupture your stomach. It's like I started just with orange juice. And I watered that down to start with. And I started to soup, you know, and within a week I was sort of... But there were certain things I never got a hunger for after that again. You know, there are certain things I just never felt that I wanted to eat again after that. But, you know...